What's going on, guys? This is episode 728, and I have an incredible, awesome guest expert on the podcast today, my buddy Marcus Krigler, who is my personal CPA. He is the CPA for so many successful, active real estate investors and entrepreneurs across the country. And guys, this could be, and this isn't hyperbole, I hope I'm not overstating this, but I truly believe that this is the type of episode that you're going to want to listen to two, three, four times. And the type of episode that not only can save you a lot of money, but can make you a lot of money. So guys, Marcus is, like I said, he's a CPA. He's the CEO of BEC CFO, which he started back in 2020 to really help real estate investors and entrepreneurs scale and grow their business. And the guy's just a ninja when it comes to critically thinking through problems and coaching, and just a wealth, just drops so much knowledge and information on his Facebook for free. And it had such an impact on me that I sent him a text. I'm like, dude, I got to get you on the podcast. I have so many questions I want to ask you, and I know you're going to completely overdeliver for my audience. And so some of the things we talk about on this episode, guys, is what is the fastest way to passive income? And I use the words passive income in quotes. We talk about building wealth. We talk about what drives more profits. And hint, hint, it's the decision maker of the business owner and the entrepreneur. And so we talk about how to acquire assets, and we talk about why it's a mistake to invest passively before your business is ready. And we even talk about the secret formula, which I'll tease you with. So guys, definitely listen to this episode, put it on repeat, save it, download it, share it with your friends, because I'm telling you, if you can hear the energy in my voice, it's for a reason. I know what you're about to hear, and it's packed with goodies. It's packed with nuggets. Enjoy them, chew on them, swallow them, implement them, because it's going to do you, your body, and your business good. So before we transition into the episode, I have a special sponsor, myself. I am sponsoring my own podcast because, well, it's my podcast and I can sponsor it. So with that being said, I am offering to personally work with up to 7 people, of which some of those spots are already taken, to privately get you your first storage deal within 6 to 12 months. If you are in the single family space and you're tired of chasing deals, if you're tired of shrinking margins, increased overhead, employee turnover, constantly training, et cetera, just playing the wrong game, and or you want to add storage to your portfolio, text me the word storage deal, 305-318-6213. Text me storage deal, 305-318-6213. I'll hop on a call with you, kind of share with you what I got, see if it's a fit, and go from there. So with that being said, sponsor message over. Let's transition into the content that I know is going to help you in your business in 2024. Let's dive right into it with my buddy, Marcus Krigler.
You're listening to Flip Empire, the show committed to helping real estate entrepreneurs who want to build their empire without sacrificing their life. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
Welcome everyone, Alex Pardo here. Super pumped, excited to come at you with another masterclass. And when I say masterclass, I don't use those words lightly, because I got my good friend Marcus Krigler in the house. Marcus, I was just kind of showering him with praise before we started the podcast, because I've been stalking the dude's Facebook for like the last 40 minutes. I'm not kidding you, because I feel like I'm blowing up his head here a bit, but like seriously, every post is like a valuable gold nugget. And I was sharing with Marcus, I'm like, man, give me some latitude on this podcast interview, because I want to kind of take this in a different direction. And I think if you're listening to this, watching this, you'll find it extremely valuable, because what I'd like to do is I have probably 20 something of Marcus gold nuggets post here on a Word doc. And I've highlighted certain ones that I'd like for him to elaborate on and go deeper. And just so you guys know, I'm a client of Marcus and his team. Phenomenal service. Marcus is a CPA, and the guy just knows so much about finances. And I really want you guys to walk away from this podcast episode equipped with more knowledge and more wisdom about how to be a better entrepreneur, how to be a better investor, what to look at when it comes to your financial statements, how you can improve and keep track of your personal finances. I mean, there's a lot of different directions we can take this particular podcast episode in. Let's go with the flow here. I got a lot of different things I want to ask Marcus about. So with that being said, dude, man, thank you for hopping on the show here.
Oh man, stoked to be here. It's been a little while since I've done a podcast. We've been going back and forth trying to get this scheduled, and we're able to make it happen. So it's the first podcast I've done in a while, and I'm excited that it's yours.
Awesome, brother. Well, dude, I'm pumped to jump into the conversation. So let me do this. You had a post on your Facebook account, which I want to encourage everybody to check out. Marcus Krigler, search for him on Facebook. But back in October, I want to say, you did a post, and it started with "What I Believe," and you had 16 nuggets. And to your credit, you even said at the bottom, you said, "These are my beliefs today, based on my experiences working with entrepreneurs across the country." And by the way, one of the reasons I think you guys need to listen to Marcus is, aside from the fact that I trust him and I'm not going to bring you somebody who I don't think can deliver the goods, is Marcus has worked with so many entrepreneurs across the country, and not just real estate investors, by the way, but just entrepreneurs in general. And so he gets a behind the scenes look as to what makes businesses grow, succeed, prosper, thrive, and then the ones that don't. Right. And so he comes at it from that perspective. And obviously, he's a business owner himself. And so he's got unique insight and perspective that I think is going to be extremely valuable for us today. But back on Marcus's post, he said, "They are subject to change based on new lessons and experiences, but I think these beliefs will, by and large, stand the test of time." So, dude, let's dive into one of those that I highlighted. Having a successful business is the fastest way to passive income. So let me add some color here before I hand the ball over to you. I always kind of cringe when I hear passive income, because this is what I think I believe. And feel free to challenge me if you feel otherwise, Marcus. I don't know that I believe in passive income. I believe everything requires some level of energy, effort, and attention, at least at the beginning. I'm not saying after that it can't be more passive, but sometimes I think the words passive income confuse people, and they think that it's like they do nothing and they just get this internet mailbox money. I think that holds people back, or that sets up the wrong expectation. But I never quite heard it or read it the way that you put it. Having a successful business is the fastest way to passive income. So elaborate, my friend.
Yeah. So, well, I think first off, a lot of people, especially in the real estate industry, what do we get in here for, right? It's freedom. It's the ability to go in and set your time and set your day. And really, that stems from this concept of what you're talking about, which is passive income. And it's funny that real estate is really kind of one of the only industries that really talks about this concept of passive income. There's not a lot of other industries other than real estate that talks about that. But the problem with it is there is no passive income. There's always somebody working for that income. And it doesn't matter if you have a single family rental and you've got a management company doing it, and maybe you just got to make a couple decisions a month to say, "Hey, yes, we need to replace that roof," or "No, we don't want that tenant," right? And so there's always somebody behind making that passive income for you, and you've got to pay them for it, right? Yeah. It's not free. So what you're doing in order to create passive income, you have to take money and pay for somebody else's active time, right? That's even in the stock market. Think about it, right? If Amazon's growing and you're getting dividends from Amazon, how many millions of people that work for Amazon?
It's true.
They're not passive, right? That's right. You're passive in how you're paying them to do it. So you're only getting a small piece of the profits because the active people are getting the majority of the profits, mm-hmm. right? And so to have a successful business, it allows you the ability to afford people, to afford to pay people, to allow yourself to step into that more of a passive role. But that doesn't mean it's a passive investment necessarily, because somebody's still active. It's just passive for you because you can afford it. And so what I believe in is, if you can get your business to a spot where you are successful and you are stacking up cash and you're stacking up cash flow and you're consistently bringing in revenue above and beyond your expenses, then you're going to have the ability to invest in different assets, in different people that will allow you to be a lot more passive than what you might be in a regular business, right?
Yeah.
So that's kind of what I'm talking about there is. And plus, here's the other thing. The return on investment on a passive investment is pennies on the dollar generally compared to your active business.
So right? true.
And so you've got this active business. Hey, I'm grinding, I'm working. And then we take that money out of there when it makes sense, and only when it makes sense. And then we put it into something that's going to give us pennies on the dollar. But here's a little nugget. A lot of people do that too early, right? Yeah, they take too much money out of their business too early. And they're like, "Hey, I'm making, you know," most people in this industry can easily get a 3X return on marketing, right?
Yep.
Easily. So I got 3X return on marketing, but I'm going to go buy a rental property that gives me a 10% cash on cash return. may make sense if you got a lot of cash in the business, but if you do it too early, now you're giving up your ability to scale and ultimately get to where you could have 10 of those single family rentals, 20 of those single family rentals, a self-storage unit, whatever that might be.
Yeah, brother, you teed me up beautifully, and we did not plan and talk about this because the next thing I had highlighted speaks to the very thing you're talking about. Why is it a mistake to invest passively before your active business is ready? And I think you just talked about it, man. I've seen a lot of investors that they get into real estate because of the cash flow and the wealth building aspect. And before they have enough money in the bank account, they're out acquiring a rental property. And I understand the mindset of acquiring assets because that's one of the things that we're going to talk about here shortly. But they bleed themselves of the ability to fund the business. And one of the things you've said that I've heard from others as well is that cash is the oxygen of the business, right? So elaborate a bit on like, when is it the right time for those listening to know and be able to discern and decipher, hey, now it makes sense. I have enough cash in the business where I can take some of this and go acquire an asset.
Yeah. So, you know, I can go with it two different ways. I can go from a philosophical standpoint and a numbers standpoint. So I'm going to hit it both ways. And so, or quantitative and qualitative, if you will. So in one standpoint, you've got to have a quantitative measure of, okay, how much money do I need to have in the bank in order to support this business, right? And then the other thing is, what do I feel? What does my business feel like? Where's the market going? Everybody's going to be a little bit different, right? And so that's why I like to look at both quantitative and qualitative, right? And so from a quantitative standpoint, what I tell people is before you even start thinking about investing into physical assets, you at least, at a minimum, need to have 3 months worth of working capital in your business. Now, between the 3 month spot and the 6 month spot, which is where 6 months is where I think above and beyond that, we probably don't need too much. Now, there's conservative people out there. Somebody may be cringing at me saying that. The reason why 6 months is enough in most businesses, not all businesses, but 6 months is enough is because as an entrepreneur, if you go 6 months in your business with massive changes in revenue, but you don't make adjustments expense-wise, you're probably not a very good entrepreneur anyways, right? Yeah. But if you have 6 months worth of working capital, that could last you a year and a half if you're managing your capital appropriately, right? And so that's just from a working capital standpoint. Now, if you're somebody that flips properties, right, working capital goes above and beyond what's in the bank and what your income and expenses are to give you that working capital. You've got to also have an additional savings as reserves for any potential issues in your fix and flip business, right?
Yeah.
So what I recommend is to have right around 10% of your acquisition cost in the bank before you take on an additional flip and certainly before you buy any real estate. So for instance, you're somebody that consistently has about $5 million worth of real estate sitting on the books and you're flipping it at any given time, I'd want to at least have $500,000 of cash setting aside on top of my working capital for any potential issues with my property. Because we all know there's always going to be something that goes wrong with a fix and flip.
Inevitably.
The house down the street sold for $50,000 more. This one sold for $50,000 less. And I have no idea why. It just happens, right? Yeah. And we can't control that. But what we can control is when we get into those scenarios where we're creating too much risk in our business. So from a quantitative standpoint, I like to have at least 3 months worth of working capital working towards 6 months. You can invest, you can start investing slowly from that 3 to 6 month time frame. A hard no, no investing, no nothing. Typically, if you're fixing flipping a property, you got other people's money involved. You have to protect their money. Way before you focus on your wealth, you have to protect your people's money. And so you got to have that, you know, let's say $500,000 sitting there if you've got $5 million of flip property. Hey, that's a good start. That'll get you there. And now you can start thinking about, okay, what do I want to invest in? How do I want to invest? What does it look like? And then from just kind of that feeling, right? Of let's say it's, you know, maybe that number is $800,000 is what you have in the bank. Maybe $800,000 in the bank in 2021 when we're going gangbusters, maybe that feels pretty good. Mm-hmm. But maybe in 2024 when we're like, market, I don't know what's going to happen. Maybe it goes up, maybe it goes down. Maybe I want to go to like 1.2 in cash, right? Just to give myself a little bit more leeway in case something happens, right? So there's that gut feeling that comes with it too, which as an entrepreneur, that's a muscle that you gain over time.
That's right. Yep, that's right. That's experience. Brother, I'm so happy to hear you say that, because so much of this is like, Marcus can give you his beliefs and share with you his thought process, but, and I want you guys to pay attention and look at it from kind of his ears and maybe a different perspective, but what he just said at the end, I think is a valuable skill that we as entrepreneurs need to develop and really hone in on, is listen to your gut, listen to your internal clock. Like, what does it tell you? There's a lot of uncertainty as now we're in 2024 about like, the market just continues to kind of go up and up. And obviously we're raised last year, but like, nobody's got a crystal ball. We have some assertions we can make about where we think the market's going, but it's not a bad idea, in my opinion, to be maybe a little bit more conservative than you might have been in the past. But everybody's going to be different because we all have a different risk tolerance. It's interesting. I was listening to something Grant Cardone said not too long ago, and I respect him in many ways, but I don't necessarily subscribe to everything he believes in and kind of teaches. But one of the things that I thought was pretty polarizing that he said, and Ed Milet had the complete opposite opinion, was to go broke. Like, go broke, invest all your money because that keeps you hungry, was basically his message. I think I'm doing it justice. And Ed Milet was like, that's crazy. Like, if you think you need to go broke in order to like be motivated and be hungry, then something else is wrong. I think I know where you're going with it, but where do you kind of stand on that philosophy of like, drain your account, invest it into assets, invest it into the business so that you can continue to stay hungry and motivated?
Yeah, you know, the answer is they're both right. I mean, I think we can both understand what it's like to have a drive that is, hey, if I don't get this done, I don't know what the next day looks like, right? And so that drive does push you, but there's a skill into maintaining that drive, whether you are at $1 million, at $100,000, or $10 million.
Yeah.
And so when I look at like the wealthiest people in the world, I'm not here to believe that every day they wake up looking to go broke, right? They have figured out how to maintain that drive without worrying about what's in the bank account. That's a byproduct of the drive that they have every single day. So I would say they're both right in this instance, because one is creating the skill of the drive. The other one is taking it and expanding it. Because my guess is, and again, I don't think anybody, I think Grant obviously is coming to the table with a extreme example, go broke, go to zero. That gets likes, that gets clicks, but in all reality, that's not realistic. So I don't know that he's actually preaching that. I think what he's preaching is you've got to learn to maintain that drive.
Yeah.
And then once you learn to maintain that drive, then you can go from making $1 million a year to making $10 million a year to making $100 million a year, because it's not about the money. I'm skilled enough to continue that drive. And mentally, I still want to do that drive, right? But I can tell you from a long-term mental standpoint, most entrepreneurs, if they continue to go broke over and over again, they're probably not going to be in the entrepreneur game very long, right? Yeah. There's only so much of that you can handle from a spouse perspective, from a kid's perspective. I mean, we're just talking about reality here.
I think the other thing that's important that people really think through is, what season of life are you in? Are you listening to this and you're in your 20s and, you know, you're single, you don't have a family? Your risk tolerance might be very different from somebody who's in their 50s or 60s that, you know, has a family, has kids, or looking to at some point retire. Like, so I think the season of life you're in, like all these nuggets that we're sharing with you, like take it with a grain of salt, because it may or may not be applicable to your particular situation. But I think these are just wise principles that Marcus is sharing with you today. Man, one thing that you said that kind of caught my eye, and to be perfectly honest with you, I'm not sure that I agree with you, but I'm very open to going a little bit deeper here. I guess that's the caveat, right? You didn't say it was the best. But talk about single family rentals, because what you said here is rentals are one of the best savings accounts you can put your money. And I've had rentals, man, and I'm in the process of selling the last ones I have so that I could just double down on storage. Because one of the things that I didn't realize about owning rental properties, that kind of sounds obvious when you talk about it, but honestly, when I went into it, I just didn't really like think that far ahead, is you can make $200, $300, $400, $500 a month in cash flow. But then one big work order, a roof, a furnace, or this or that, and it kind of wipes out your cash flow for the year.
Yep.
So what I think I came to realize is that if you're going to have a rental portfolio, yeah, cash flow could be a part of it, but think big picture, think long-term when it comes to owning rentals. Where do you land on that? And can you elaborate on your statement?
I mean, I don't think we're disagreeing at all, actually. I just think we're looking at the concept a little different. So when I say a savings account, let's think about what a savings account really is. You put money in, you get very little cash flow out of it,
yep,
but it's maintained, it's intact. You feel pretty safe with it, right? Mm-hmm. And so a single family residence is what I think is one of the best savings accounts you can have. You're going to have a better interest rate. Let's forget about cash flow. Let's say all your cash flow is eaten up by repairs and maintenance and everything else that goes along with single family rentals, which in my experience is pretty common, right? Yep. Unless you have no debt, right? So if you have no debt on that property, then you know you might have a lot more cash flow, but then just a little gold nugget, go look at your return on equity on that cash ROE. Flow.
Exactly.
So again, I don't want to get too far off track here.
I'll circle back to ROE, by the way, but go ahead.
Love it. But from a savings account perspective, let's just look at it this way. If you go put down $20,000 on a $100,000 house, and that $100,000 house is appreciating at 4% a year. So every year that house is an additional roughly $4,000. Tell me another savings account where you can go put $20,000 into it, and every year that savings account can grow by $4,000. Mm. There's not one out there, right? Yeah. You're getting a 25% growth just in appreciation on that. Right. And so that's why I say it's a great savings account, but it is not something that is going to be this, in my opinion, unless you play with the debt side of it, it's not something that's going to create a ton of cash flow for you and allow you to retire, right? It is, hey, I've got an extra $20,000. I'm going to go put it into this single family residence. Maybe in 10 years from now, that $20,000 is now worth $60,000. Maybe it's now worth $70,000, but my principal is still intact, just like a savings account. And then, you know, another way to look at it is kind of like a CD. You know, maybe our grandparents used to do CDs a lot. Maybe you got a CD from your grandparents and they're like, we put $5,000 in it and you get no interest basically on it. But at the end, you can get $5,500. Yeah. It's almost like a CD in that scenario.
No, you're 100% right, dude. I thought we might disagree, but I think you're right. We were just looking at it kind of when I first read it, I looked at it from a different perspective. But as I hear you kind of elaborate, yeah, like we're very aligned. Now, you did talk about ROE. We recently, at our last Ascend Mastermind retreat, we talked at length about looking at your return on equity. Yeah. And a good majority of the room was like on the same page. And then there was a few that were like, talk more about ROE. I've always looked at ROI, right? Mm-hmm. But like ROE. And what we found is that there's so many people that don't even know what their return on equity is. And when they calculate it, you're talking 2, 3, 4, 5%, right? So let's start with kind of like just the genesis. What is ROE and why is it so important?
Yeah. So I tell people this a lot of times. Year one of owning an investment, cash on cash return is a great metric. Assuming you have an appreciating asset, which in real estate, that's what we're hoping to buy, cash on cash return no longer matters as soon as it starts appreciating, right? Because what we put into it, we're missing out on the potential opportunity cost, right? When we talk about ROE, we're talking about opportunity cost. And the best way I can do it is as an example. Let's say that $100,000 rental property went to $200,000 over 7 years, right? Mm-hmm. Doubled over 7 years. Well, you put $20,000 down. You started with $20,000 in equity. And maybe it was making, let's call it $2,000 a year in cash flow. So you got a 10% cash on cash return year one. Year seven is now worth $200,000. And maybe your cash flow is $3,000.
Yeah.
Well, how much equity do you have in that? You got $120,000 worth of equity. $3,000 on $120,000 worth of equity is awful, right? Yeah. So now you've got to go back and decide, how do I maximize my return on equity? Because just a little shift in that mindset, you could change your complete financial future. And let me give you an example of a client that I was talking to 3 months ago.
Okay.
They came to me and they were like, hey, Marcus, my biggest goal is to get where we have $50,000 a month in cash flow. I'm sure there's listeners that are like, hey, I relate to that guy.
For sure.
I said, okay, cool. Let's just look and see what you got going on. See how far you're away from it. Now, why not? So I looked at his portfolio. He's got a pretty large portfolio. He's got a lot of equity in his portfolio. And I started looking at him. He got about $7 million worth of equity in that portfolio. I said, man, you're working all this time and effort into your business, trying to build this passive income that you can get to 50,000. And I said, well, what if you just focused on that $7 million worth of equity that you have and focused on getting 10% a return on that equity? What would that give you on an annual basis? So instead of working in his business all the time, he's working on his equity, maximizing that return. Now, notice I said working. You don't maximize return on equity by it being passive, right? That's not a passive play. You maximize return on equity by working for it, diversifying into the right assets, and truly trying to figure out how to get that $7 million out of 10% and 8% return on equity annually. And he's already won. The game's already there. He just didn't know how to play it.
Yeah. Right? That's such a fascinating example, because I think there's going to be quite a few listeners and people watching this in the future that it's right under their nose. They can't see it. I'm reading this book now that was recommended to me by a friend called Business Secrets of the Bible by Daniel Lapman. And there's a segment in there where he talks a lot about just being a good and wise steward of the money that God's entrusted to us. And we're not going to get into a faith talk here, but I think part of being a good steward, Marcus, is looking at the assets that you have in your portfolio and asking that very question, like, is this the best use of the equity that's tied up in these assets?
That's right.
So I'm glad we had that conversation, because I think there's a lot of people out there that are not even aware of ROE, return on equity. Right. And if they are now, like, go look at that. What kind of return are you getting on your equity? Because oftentimes, at least based on some of the people I've talked to, they're not happy with the number when they figure it out. But at least now, to your point, it's an opportunity cost play. Okay, like, what am I going to do now that I know I have this equity trapped and it's not earning me very much?
I'll give you, again, another nugget here. If you want to look at your return on equity, let's look at your REO, real estate owned schedule, right? So return on equity, ROE, we need to look at our REO, which, if you're not familiar with a real estate owned schedule, real estate owned schedule is very different than your financial statements. Your financial statements will not tell you this. Your real estate owned schedule tells you how much the value of your property is, how much debt you have on that property, how much the projected cash flow is on it with all things being well, how much the actual cash flow is on it, which is always going to be less than what you actually think it's going to be, right? So you've got this real estate owned schedule that you should be maintaining every month and managing so that you can make decisions, right? So keeping that schedule will allow you to be a good decision maker because you've got the information.
Again, dude, like, we're tracking and vibing here, because the very next thing I wanted to go to was about decision making. And there's two things I want to read, because I think this is going to apply to everybody listening, no matter if you're a wholesaler, fix and flip, storage investor, whatever asset class you're in, this is going to apply to you. And I'm looking for it here. I just lost it. It says, the health of a business is 100% correlated to the decision making of the owner. Right after that, better profits come from better decisions, and better decisions come from better information. So that one right there, I think, speaks to the very thing you were just talking about. Is there anything else? I mean, you were pretty concise and clear with what you just shared, but I guess let me ask you a specific question. How can people listening to this start to know what's the information they need so that they can make better decisions?
That's a great, great question. So I think the easiest place is to start in your financials. And I know I'm an accountant and I'm a CPA, and that sucks that that's the answer, because it's not a fun answer. I don't know if this got posted today or not, because kind of how we do our content, but one of the posts that will be coming out is the secret behind a successful business is not sales, it's accounting. And I can prove that in many different ways, because how come Alex Pardo is more successful than this person over here that does the exact same thing? It's because Alex Pardo made better decisions because he had better data. Right? Yeah. Simple as that. And right. And if somebody else is more successful than Alex, it's because they had even better data and made better decisions for them. Yeah. And so what I will say to that answer is, you've got to learn accounting. You've got to learn what the ins and outs of your business is. And what I suggest that you do is that every month you have a money meeting, right? We call it a money meeting in our company, where you're putting together your financial packet, and there's a whole list of reports that I would want to have in that financial packet. But every month, in a rhythm, we call it a financial rhythm, we're going to look at our financial packet. In the first month, the second month, the third month, you're not even going to know what it means. You're not going to know what it looks like. It's going to be foreign to you. Mm-hmm. But as you gain that muscle, it will allow you to start making better decisions. Yeah. And so that's really the answer, is if you want to have better results, and we kind of boil what you just said down into a very simple equation, better decisions equals better results. That's it. It's that simple. And what I want to get all of your listeners to, all of my clients to, everybody in the world to, is to get to where they're making better decisions, because I know better decision making is always correlated to better results. And I think the majority of business owners don't lack decision making in their sales process, their marketing process, even their hiring process. A lot of their, it is decision making within their actual financial well-being in their company.
Right?
That's really what I think most people are missing.
I love it, dude. And I think so many people kind of abdicate that responsibility to somebody else because they're intimidated by just not understanding it, right? They don't speak the language of money. They haven't invested the time and energy to like fully understand. And I would call myself to the carpet and just be like very honest that this is an area that I committed to get sharper in 2024, because I feel like I understand and can read financial statements, and I know that there's room for growth in that area. And the more information and data I have, to your point, Marcus, the better decision I can make. Because it's one thing, I talk to so many investors in different masterminds, and everybody talks about their CRM with their fancy KPIs, you know, their key performance indicators, their dashboards. And it's like, okay, great that you track that. Can you tell me what the story tells you? What do the numbers tell you? One thing is having the numbers. Another thing is like, okay, like, what does that data feed you? And then what decisions are you going to make as a result of it, right?
Absolutely. And listen, at the reality is this. I look at financials every day. I'm analyzing. Before we just got on here, I just doing a budget for a client and looking at all of their KPIs, are their projected KPIs if we hit the budget, and what I liked about it, what I didn't like about it, where I thought our potential issues were going to be this year. I'm learning something new every time I'm doing it, right? This isn't something that you're going to become an expert at. I understand it, so I'm done. I look at financials every single day, and I'm always looking at different new things. I'm always looking at new KPIs. I'm always looking at people that have been there before, done that before, looked at these certain issues and how they've addressed them, right? And so I think just like anything, you got to keep learning, and your sales skills keep growing. Your marketing skills keep growing. Your finance skills have to keep growing too. That's it. It's that simple. Just add that to your repetitions.
That's right. I love it. Well, to kind of continue along this theme, one of the things I'll read that you wrote down, and this wasn't in your list of 16, this was a different post, but I think it ties in perfectly to what we're talking about, that we can maybe go a little bit deeper and more specifically give people listening like some actionable content in addition to everything else you've shared. You said, break your P&L down into four categories.
Sure.
Revenue, advertising expense, human capital expense, and general administrative expense. Your solution to the problem is buried in those numbers. The most likely culprit is that you're spending money on advertising your people without getting the necessary return on that investment. Once you figure out what's not working, then get into the details and figure out how to fix it. Dude, when I read that this morning, I was like, damn, that's good. It sounds obvious, but it's like the problem is buried in those numbers. Can you go a little bit deeper there?
Yeah, let's just look at it from a very high view. So we understand that as entrepreneurs, we got to get to a spot where we can make good decisions as quick as possible. And so what I like to do is to make my decision making as easy and simple as possible. So instead of having this major P&L that has 17 million accounts on it, I like to dumb this thing down into four. If I'm starting to analyze, I'm going to go deeper, but I'm going to start with just four. 30,000 foot view: revenue, advertising, people, and everything else.
Okay.
I call it G&A. But if it's not advertising or people, it's everything else that goes into G&A.
Okay.
What you can start doing is you can start looking at trends. Where has your marketing to revenue been, right? So if you're seeing your return on marketing, so if you say, let me try and make this a little bit more clear. Let's say you make $1 million in revenue in a year and you spend $100,000 on advertising. Mm-hmm. That's 10% of your revenue went to advertising for the year.
Right.
Let's say that was in 2022. Maybe in 2023, we look at it and say, well, this year I made $1 million in revenue, but I spent $200,000 in marketing. Now, this is a very simplified example. You're getting up 20% of your expenses are going to marketing. Now we got to figure out, all right, our marketing cost went up with the same amount of revenue. What went broke? What broke? Something broke between 2022 and 2023.
Yeah.
And so that allows us to make a decision in how to fix that for 2024. So we call that common sizing your P&L. So you want to see what those three expense categories are compared to your revenue. And then once you can do that, you can start looking at trends over time to see, am I improving it or is that getting worse? And then once you figure out, okay, is it getting better or worse? Okay, it's getting better. Cool. What did we do differently? Our human capital percentage getting better. Okay, we put in a better comp structure. I hired a better acquisition person that is giving me better results. You know, all of these things.
Right.
Or it could be the exact opposite, right? Well, you know, in 2022, our acquisition person was motivated. They were out there. They were hungry. 2023, they kind of were fat and happy, right? And so we can start diagnosing where's our problem, where's our issue. And if we can keep up with that every month, then we can start doing it earlier and earlier, right? So if I'm 3 months into 2024 and I see my advertising expense compared to my revenue has shot up, we need to make some adjustments quick. Because otherwise I may lose the rest of 2024, because we know real estate, if you don't act quickly, the year goes by pretty quick.
That's right. It's what we're leading indicators versus lagging indicators, right?
That's right.
Man, something you said here, which kind of ties into, it's interesting, you were talking about advertising expense. You said, and this one, I had to read it a couple of times, if I'm being honest with you. So maybe I'm more on the amateur side and I need to transition to the pro side a bit more, or maybe not. You tell me. It says amateurs spend on marketing to maximize revenue. If I just would have stopped there, I would have probably agreed, like, okay, that makes sense. Like, we advertise to maximize revenue. And then you said pros spend money on marketing to maximize capacity.
That's right.
When you say capacity, what exactly are you referring to? Are you talking about the human capital, the team, relative to like what you're able to generate?
Totally, totally. So many times I see people come in and first off, they have no idea what their team is actually capable of doing, right? Sometimes they think they can do X, but data shows that only so many appointments an acquisition person can go on, right? Depending on how your business is, you know, you've got lead managers, you've got transaction coordinators, you've got acquisitions, you've got dispositions, right? If you're looking at a traditional real estate business, well, any of those positions that are out of capacity, if you will, and not aligned within the organization, you could be spending money on marketing and not getting a maximizing return on that marketing because let's say, hey, you marketed for 300 deals, but your team can only do 200.
Yeah.
They're only going to be able to do 200. It doesn't matter how much you market. You're going to waste a third of your marketing. It's just going to happen. And again, when you start your business, you're an amateur, right? We can agree on that.
Yep.
So you start your business, you're starting your business just to get revenue. And we're just, how do I get revenue? Revenue, revenue, revenue. And when you're starting your business, it's typically you, maybe it's another couple people, but there's really no capacity constraints because typically your capital is going to be way less than your available capacity, right?
Usually.
Let's just say sometimes, right? Yeah. It could happen. But as you grow and you start to scale, what happens is you stay in that mentality of, okay, I'm going to continue to market to revenue, market for revenue, market for revenue. And then next year, you're like, okay, well, I'm going to spend $500,000 on marketing. It's going to make me $3 million in revenue. My team's only capable of doing two. I don't have enough acquisitions. I don't have enough lead managers. I don't have enough transaction coordinators. So what I really mean by that is there comes a point in your time where you've got to change from an amateur business to a professional business. And that professional business is dictated based on capacity. And so if you want to increase your marketing spend next year so that you can increase your revenue, you got to go down to your human capital piece and say, hey, do we have enough acquisitions people in here? If we're coming to the table and saying, okay, and again, if you're not a real estate investor, you can apply all of this information to your business. It's no different than my business is the same, right? We have capacity. We only market to our capacity,
right?
And so if you focus on the people and you think, okay, well, my acquisition person can do $200,000 every month this year, but the best they've ever done is 150, you'll probably get yourself into a spot where you're not going to be successful. You're going to waste money on marketing because you're trying to get them somewhere where they don't have the physical time to do it.
Interesting, man. That nugget right there, if people were to rewind this podcast and listen to that and listen to it again, who knows how much marketing dollars that can save you if you're fully able to wrap your head around that. Look at your team, whether you're a one-man show or one-woman show, or you have 8, 9, 10, 15, 20 people on your team. because I see so many people just, they try to throw money at marketing thinking that that's going to solve their problem. And they might be throwing money at the wrong thing because they have a capacity issue. That's interesting, man. I want to start to get you out of here as we start to kind of wind down the show and talk a little bit about personal finances. Obviously, that's a big topic and maybe not the best one to end the show with. But one thing is the P&L and the balance sheet and the cash flow statement of your business. Another thing is actually like your personal finances. Are there any strategies, tips, anything you can share that people can leave with when it comes to their personal budget, their personal finances, and how they can focus on growing their net worth?
Yeah. Well, I mean, my wife is in the other room, so I'm happy to bring her in here because she does all of our personal finances.
I love it.
I'll be the first one to admit that I do finances all day. She's the rock star. She keeps our budget. But let me tell you what we did within our family that has worked out really, really well for us.
Okay.
So when I started this business, my wife and I had a conversation of what do we want to take out of this business every month? What's the number? This is what we want to get this business to. And then once we get to that number, then we're going to let the business grow. We're going to let the business organically grow. But obviously, some people talk about profit first. Whatever your opinion is on how to do it, we made the decision to get to our number that we wanted to take home every month. And hey, this was going to cover all of our bills. This was going to cover everything. And then once we got to that spot, then it allowed us to organically start growing the business. So I didn't go into some massive business growth until I hit my personal number.
Okay.
Because that piece of the puzzle, I think mentally, is what keeps you strong, right? And so if you know, hey, my stuff is taken care of personally, we're good. Going back to the beginning of this conversation in my business, I've got my savings squared away. I've got my working capital. I've got my reserves. Now, you can start making decisions. Again, going back to that decision making, you can start making decisions clear-headed, right? It's not, oh, I need to take this $10,000 and send it over to the family account instead of putting that in marketing because we're out of money, right?
Yeah.
And so the best thing that I can do for you guys as listeners is for you to get your number, set your number, and that's what you take out of your business every single month. And that is what you and your family have agreed upon is the right number. And come hell or high water, you hit that number. You get that number to your family. You know, if we go back to Grant Cardone, go broke. That's the broke number. You got to hit that number. That's the thing that's driving you.
Yeah.
Then it clears everything out. It de-stresses your life. And now you're clear-headed to go make those decisions. So that's the best thing that I could give you. Obviously, controlling your expenses, not overspending, you know, all of those things are important things. But at the end of the day, those philosophies don't really matter until you decide what you're going to get out of your business on a consistent basis.
Right? Yeah.
And then we look at, you know, you get your quarterly bonuses if you want to do that. You get your quarterly distributions if you want to do that. But really on a monthly basis, you just know, hey, my distribution, if it's 10,000, 20,000, 50, I don't care what the number is.
Yeah.
My distribution comes out. Business has got to survive without it.
Yeah, man, so much wisdom and insight that we could go on for hours and hours, man. So guys, what I want to encourage you to do is if those of you are watching this on YouTube or somewhere online, I want you to connect with Marcus, BECCFO.com. Marcus, can you elaborate, just spell out like BECCFO? So like, just in case my Cuban accent's getting in the way of people understanding what that domain is.
Yeah, absolutely. BECCFO. So I'll just give you a quick background if you don't mind. So when I started this business, I started this for my family. I'm a family man. It was the reason why I wanted to take this risk. And so BEC, maybe some of your listeners will remember this, Bennett Ella Carter is the name of my three kids. And so Bennett Ella Carter, and then CFO, just like Chief Financial Officer, that'll get you to our website. Follow me on social. I don't yet. Maybe by the time we got some goals to do a little bit more social media. I don't know how to do any of that stuff. I'm just an accountant. But I post some stuff on Facebook that you know, some people find valuable. So if you can come and add me as a friend on Facebook, I'll definitely accept your request and maybe you'll get some value from it.
Yeah. Well, guys, if you found this valuable, and I'll go out on a limb, as bold as this may sound, is I'm going to say 100% of the people listening to this got some level of value. I'm sure a lot. All of this came from me stalking Marcus's Facebook, reaching out to him and like, dude, got to get you on the podcast. We made it happen. So this is one of those shows I want to encourage you to go back and listen to a second and third time, because I bet you anything, you'll pick up on something that Marcus shared that you didn't quite hear or maybe understand the first time around. So definitely want to encourage you to listen to this and then share it, right? Like, that's one of the biggest gifts you can give somebody that hosts a podcast or somebody who's authored a book is share their content, share their resources. Definitely encourage you to reach out to Marcus, obviously, if you guys are interested in connecting with him and his team about their services. And then follow him because you'll just be wiser and you'll understand the language of money better. So Marcus, my man, dude, thank you for everything that you guys have done for me. And I'm grateful for the relationship. Thank you for hopping on and kind of pouring and sharing your wisdom. And guys, the show doesn't exist without you. So thank you for continuing to support it. Make sure that you're subscribed. flipempire.com/podcast. That'll take you right to Apple Podcasts where you can subscribe and get notified every single Monday morning when new shows and masterclass episodes get released. So thank you guys so much. Marcus, appreciate you, man. This is definitely one that I'm going to go back and listen to as well. So thank you, man.
It's been an honor.
Awesome. Take care, guys. One last thing before you go. If you have been listening to the show for a while and or you have been getting value from the show, I would be 100% honored if you would share this show with a friend. Or maybe share it with somebody that you think could benefit from this. It's my mission, it's my cause, it's my purpose through Flip Empire to impact and touch people's lives and in their businesses. So it would be an honor if you would be willing to share this episode. And one last thing, make sure that you're subscribed so that you get notified every Monday and Thursday when shows get released. I look forward to connecting with you on the next one. Until then, have a great day.